Coming up later this month, it'll be a very cool WPR event that I'll be attending, and I hope you can come too. It's in the Milwaukee area. Come and enjoy dinner. You can bid on some silent auction items featuring Packer tickets and Harley Davidson gear, and brush up your art skills. Maybe you can do that. Play WPR Trivial Pursuit. Meet Kathleen Dunn and me, and enjoy some other fun surprises, too. At the end of the night, Kathleen Dunn will give you an insider's view of public radio. That's Thursday, September 25th in the Milwaukee area. And you can register right now. Go to WPR.org/Milwaukee, and you can certainly do that. And you can do it right now. Michael Perry, chances are, you'll think of one of his wonderful memoirs of small-town life in Wisconsin, or maybe an essay or an article he's written, or maybe his gig as host of 10 Show Radio. All those are true, and now you can add novelist for young people to his list. His most recent book is called The Scavengers, and it's a novel set in a dystopian future with a scrappy girl named Ford Falcon as the hero. Michael Perry, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me, Larry. Good to talk to you.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again. And I'm, you know what? I'm right on the edge of the. I've got 85% of the book finished, and I'm having a lot of fun. You know, this is for supposedly a younger audience, but I'm enjoying it too.
Well, the publisher told me that it's officially what's called a tween novel. And they have a set age that it's set that you're supposed to write it for. And so what I'm saying in public is that my intent was that it be for people between the ages of 9 to 90, give or take a couple of years on either end. I will say, that, I mean, obviously it is.
It's a big change for you.
Yeah, it's a middle grade novel is what they call it. And it definitely is primarily written for that audience. But as a father of two girls who listen to piles and piles of audiobooks and who read a lot of books, and I read books to them, I've found that the young adult and the middle grade books that I really like are not only written for that audience, but there's always backstory and humor and storyline included for the grown-ups to keep you interested as well. And
yeah.
I hope I managed that with it.
I think, yes, you certainly did. I'm wondering about the writing process. Is it different for you?
It was different in that, I mean, I'm a real respecter of genre. I don't just assume that you can happily skip from nonfiction to fiction. Just because you can do one doesn't mean you can do the other. And goodness knows I struggle enough, even in nonfiction, to get things done. But there were a couple of things going on. One was I'd written four memoirs in 10 years, and I'm still in my 40s for another 10 or 15 minutes. But I just said, could I go in a little different direction? And then the publisher had asked me if I would consider writing something for a younger audience, and I really hadn't. So I declined for a while, but then I had the germ of an idea, and then I also had two daughters and listened to a lot of the books they read, and I thought, you know, I don't expect them to read it because this is just what Dad does. But I would like the record to be there so that if someday they do, they see that I was watching them and trying to learn from them as I created this character. And then there were things going on in my life that contributed to the idea. We have the book is called The Scavengers because Maggie, who's the protagonist, the young girl, who changes her name to Ford Falcon when she decides it's time to get to change her personality, and she climbs on top of this old junker Ford Falcon she found and uses basically as her hideout and changes her name. Clearly, I drew from having two daughters that I'm raising and
sure.
watching. But there are other things. She and her family are scavengers. They're surviving in this rough rural world by scavenging junk and using it to barter in town. And out back of our farm that we actually live on, there's a ravine, and the ravine, like so many farms...
Well, we had one in our farm.
Yeah, decades ago, that's where you took the junk. There was no landfill, and you really weren't worried in those days about what you were dumping in the ravine. And if you go out in this old ravine of ours, my kids love it, because you dig around and you find old toys, and you find old pop cans and pieces of antique machinery. And so one day I was down there, and I just thought, you know, this would be an interesting setting, and the idea of them mining this scrap out of this old, long neglected place. And so that became part of the setting. And then, of course, there's a rooster that's a very strong supporting character. And apart from the fact that he's just plain nasty and he's our arch nemesis, even if they have to fight the enemy together, his defining characteristic, of course, is that he can never finish his crows. He makes it to cock-a-doodle, and then he just starts hacking and choking. And that was based on one day I had started working on the book, and there was this, I thought it'd be fun to include chickens, but I wasn't sure how. And I was feeding the chickens one morning, and we had this little banty rooster, and he could never finish his crows. But that didn't stop him from strutting around like he was the, you know, God's gift to hens. And I thought, well, that's quite a little character. And so the rooster definitely was drawn.
Oh, man. Michael Perry, our guest today, author of many books, including his latest work of fiction this time around. It's titled The Scavenger. It's a novel for, as we said, for supposedly middle grade readers, but I'm enjoying it for sure. And you know, I'll finish it up tonight. I would have finished it last night, but I had a little attack of something or other, and my eyes kind of watered over, and my nose got runny, and I just couldn't read it. I couldn't finish it.
You finally read one too many Mike Perry books. That's what happened. Allergy now has gone full blown.
Oh, man. Allergies, man. Well, I want to invite our listeners. You can join in, too, if questions or comments. I'm sure you may have read one of Michael's books. Maybe you've got a question about this one. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You mentioned you speak through a girl character, Maggie, and did you talk a little bit more about why you chose her as to create your book? Her as narrator, I should say.
Yeah, well, I'm always pretty cautious about assuming that I should have any grand mission in writing a book other than to finish it and keep my kids fed. But I will say that when I was given this opportunity to write a fiction book for young adults or middle grade people, I did from the get-go want to write a strong young female character. Again, because I'm the father of two daughters and just watching how they face the world and also wondering about the world they will face. And so again, I'm always careful about getting too grand in my design, but there was a desire to incorporate some of what I see in my daughters into this character, but also to, I hope, honor young girls everywhere who are fighting, I think, a real specific battle to find their place in the world. And then also the fun parts. I mean, my two daughters have a great sense of humor. They make me laugh, and it was important to me. You know, you hear the word dystopia, and right away it's all darkness and grimness. And the truth is I wanted there to be a lot of humor in the book, and I think there is. And
oh, there is.
She's pretty funny, and she has this mentor named Toad. He's this octogenarian old-timer who's a jack-of-all-trades, and he helps her out a lot. And at one point he gives her a book and he says, if you want to survive, you need to study this book. And it's an actual book. I have a copy of it. It was printed in the early 1900s and it's called The American Boy's Handy Book. The author is Daniel Beard, who was a friend of Mark Twain's. And on the one hand, it's a wonderful book because it's filled with all these terrific projects for kids and terribly dangerous ideas, like how to use the gas from the gas lamps to make your own hot air balloons that you just light and let off in the night, and this sort of stuff, and all manner of weapons. But there's also how to make stone fireplaces using mud from the river and things like that. And so Toad gives her this book and says, you really need to study this book. Well, what's fun about Maggie is she's very interested in the weapons and in how to make the stove out of the shale rock and that sort of thing. But of course, what she continually encounters is that this knucklehead right in the 1900s is very disdainful and dismissive of girls. And she comes across a line in there where he's telling the boys how to make weapons. And he said, don't worry, the girls will be happy with little pretty store-bought bows. Yeah. And that sets her off. And that was part of the fun, was imagining, you know, how would she really react to this? And she tells off the old guy and says she's not going to read the book, and they have a discussion. And that was fun, too. You know, I as a guy who has written almost exclusively nonfiction, when my fiction writing friends would start talking about how their characters would take over and would direct the writer how to proceed. I admit I was always a bit disdainful of that and would chuckle and give them a hard time. And I got to tell you, by three chapters in, I was struggling, and then I realized the only way to do this was to let Maggie be in charge and present her with the situation and then just imagine to myself, well, how would this girl, knowing what you know about her, react? And so part of having finished this project is now I have to write little notes of apology to all my fiction writing friends. They told me this was going to happen, and I laughed, and then, of course, that's exactly
And that's exactly what did happen. And frankly, I like the emphasis on the girl. I have my kids are girls too, so I can really relate to what you were talking about. Cynthia and Maza Maney, or I'm sorry, Menominee, has a comment. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, and I want to say hi to Michael Perry. I buy every one of your books, and I absolutely will be calling Bookends on Main to be certain.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, book. I know that place, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Susan, the owner. It's a wonderful book. And I love your comment that these books have something for adults. I've often recommended young adult novels for people who don't think they have the time or patience to read an adult novel.
Yeah, and I think, I'm going to get myself in trouble because I'm going to say something I don't know a lot about, but let's try it anyway. I do think one of the appeals of young adult and even these middle grade novels is because space is somewhat concise, you really do focus on the story. And that's one thing I kept trying to remind myself throughout the process of this book was, number one was be true to the character, but then number two, right on the heels, was just try to tell a decent yarn. You know, I try to write it in such a way that people want to keep turning the pages. And so I don't know if I succeeded or not, but I do believe that that's part of the appeal, that sometimes these books, their main purpose is just to tell you a good story and take you on an adventure. And
yeah.
That appeals across ages.
Yeah.
I have one more comment, though, if you don't mind. You were talking about the book you make reference to in the story, but there was also several years ago very popular books, The Dangerous Book for Boys and The Dangerous Book for Girls.
Yes, and actually, that's the long answer to that question. The reason I even have that book is right back around that time, an editor in New York sent me this copy of the American Boys Handy Book and said, you should rewrite this because of your background in rural Wisconsin. And it was right when that whole dangerous book thing was happening. Yeah, and so you're absolutely right about those two books. And I, at that time, declined because I felt that it was a little bit too contrived, but the book sat on my desk forever, and I just kept looking at it. And then when I started with this book, I thought, well,
let's go back to it. Yeah, to go back to it. We need to take a quick break, Mike. We'll be back with Michael Perry right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Wisconsin can be proud to claim a master storyteller like Michael Perry is one of our own. He's entertained us and struck a chord with his depictions of community, of family, and just the humor that's part of everyday life. Now he's applied his talents to writing fiction, and for middle grade readers, no less, as the sort of the primary audience, but I like the book too. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Great to have Michael Perry with us, an author, humorist, musician, host of Ten Show Radio. He's the New York Times bestselling author of Visiting Tom, A Man, A Highway, and The Road to Roughneck Grace, Coop, Truck, and a whole lot more. And his latest book is called The Scavengers. And he lives on a farm in rural Wisconsin with his wife and two daughters. Mike Perry, thank you for joining us again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm grateful to be on the air.
You can join in with your questions for Michael at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And don't let me forget, at some point here I want to mention, because you're going to be going around the state a bit, and we need to talk about where you're going to be. But before we get to that, maybe you could describe the world that Ford Falcon and her family are living in your book.
Yeah, it's sort of slowly revealed as the book unfolds, but yeah. you get the impression early on that things have changed, and she's referring to bubble cities, that at some point the government has given people a choice. You can either stay out and fend for yourself, or you can come into these enclosed cities, and we'll take care of you. And implied in that, of course, is that there's some trade-off, and as the book progresses, you learn more about that trade-off. So in a way, she's living in a world without electricity, without internal combustion engines, but she has somewhat of a modern sensibility. She was very young when this happened. She remembers living in a house with a television and that sort of thing, but it's pretty fuzzy, pretty faint. And her next-door neighbor, actually not next door, but down in the ravine, or down in the hollow below the ridge she lives on, is this couple, Toad and Arlinda, and he's this jack-of-all-trades, and he teaches her how to build things, how to fix things, and she also helps him with his bartering business. They load up this big, I don't know how to describe it, vehicle. It's towed by two oxen.
Yeah.
Frank and Spank, and they go off to town to trade what they've scavenged. Toad has his own junkyard, and of course Ford and her family have dug up what they can out of their ravine, and she accompanies him. And there's some dangers. The dangers, there's these beings called gray devils, and in some of the reviews there's been references to them as zombies, and they're actually not at all. The reason they act the way they do will be revealed in book two.
Uh-huh.
But they are dangerous for complicated reasons, and so she has to step up and help Toad guard the shipments when they take them to town, and they stop and they pick up her friend Toby, comes along with them to help in this regard. And also there are other dangers. There have been some pretty drastic changes in climate, and so they have these things called solar bears that are around, and they were originally polar bears that were, in an attempt to preserve the species, they were implanted with some DNA from grizzly bears, and as she says in the book, a little dab of coyote. And they're a little bit dangerous, and so there are a couple of scenes where she has to confront them, and they also play a role in driving the plot forward. So that's the scene, and she does a lot of hiking, and they go to town using these oxen, and some folks have horses, but they're in pretty short supply, and they're just trying to survive. And there's a lot of food gathering. You know, there's a scene where she's out gathering ferns to eat. And there's that sort of locavore thing happening. And then, of course, they're surrounded by gigantic, as far as the eye can see, fields of corn. And that's part of the backstory, is how the corn has come to dominate the landscape and why, and who's behind that.
You mentioned Arlinda and Toad. And, you know, as I read about them, I thought about one of your other books, Visiting Tom. I thought about Tom and Arlene.
I don't understand how you possibly made that connection. No, Toad and Arlinda are pretty clearly drawn from my experience with my neighbors Tom and Arlene, the ones I wrote about in the book Visiting Tom. And what happened there is I felt the more time I spent with Tom in real life, writing the book about him and about his wife, and I watched how my children acted around him and how they soaked in what they had to say. And I thought, you know, it'd really be fun for this young girl's main sidekick to be an octogenarian man and his wife, and they just to see her take wisdom from them. And it's fun to watch the interaction between Toad and Arlinda as well, because Toad is very good at teaching Ford, Falcon, or Maggie, depending which name she's using. He's very good at teaching her practical things. But you notice that Arlinda is the one who really holds things together, and is the one when Ford is really struggling, it's Arlinda who is the true source of strength. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. There's some unmistakable parallels to the real Tom, who, by the way, I just stopped as I left on this book tour. I'm going to be gone all month, and the last stop I made was with Tom, and I sat in his kitchen, and we had a nice visit. He was fixing his cuckoo clock. I wrote about his cuckoo clock in the book, and he said, right now, he said, it's got a coo, but no kook. So he's got his cuckoo clock all tore apart, and he has to make these miniature baffles for the, that makes the thing make the noise. And so he needs a super fine paper, and he had his micrometer out, and he said he needs a, I think it's a 500th or 800th. And he actually was going around to McDonald's and supermarkets and Burger King in their restrooms and stealing little pieces of their brown hand-drying paper and measuring. And he says, yeah, McDonald's, theirs is 400. So, yeah.
Well, Bob in Claybanks has something that kind of relates anyway to that. Bob, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show. In visiting town, you had a little situation with the highway commissioner described.
Yeah.
And I was curious if you had gotten any feedback from them as far after the book came out, if any of them had read that and what their editorial comments might have been.
I have not spoken to the gentleman in question subsequent to the release of the book. I do know some of the guys on the department because we're on the fire department together, but we've never discussed it. And all I can say is that they made a slight improvement to the intersection in question. And since the book came out, they haven't made it any better, but neither have they come and torn it up and made it any worse. So I'm going with that.
Well, thanks for your work. Please keep it up.
Thanks a lot, Bob, for calling. Larry in New Auburn. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hello. Yeah, I was going to ask him, in a flyer last week, I read that he had the promotional, he was promoting the book, and it had a picture of him holding a chicken. What was the chicken representing on the promotion of the book, or was that just from your farm?
Well, it's from my farm, but I think the photo you're referring to was I did a piece for Minnesota Public Radio. Came over and did an interview, and they took a picture of me holding one of my chickens in one arm and a bunch of eggs in my other hand. I think that might have been what you saw. But the reason that and there's another photo floating around with the promotions of me holding two of my roosters from our farm there. And that would be tied to the fact that part of this story with Maggie's chores at home include taking care of the chickens in the chicken coop and gathering the eggs. And then, of course, as we've discussed a little earlier, one of the main characters of the book is this idiotic rooster named Hatchet. So there are chicken themes running throughout the new book, The Scavengers.
Yeah.
That's why.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way.
Good to hear someone calling from New Auburn.
Yeah.
Speaking of what's real and what's not, there's a fictitious town in the book, The Scavengers, called Nobburn.
Yeah. Oh, man. You can join in, too, with your questions and comments for Michael Perry at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Katie on Facebook said, the first book I shared with my boyfriend was Truck. And he has a 1952 Ford truck he restored when he was in high school. And I thought, if he gets this book, this relationship may go somewhere. That was 5 years ago, and he got it.
Oh, that's excellent. Because in that book I write about being a bachelor for 39 years and finally meeting my wife. In the last chapter in the book, I'm getting married, and I'm happy to say I'm thrilled to hear about their 5 years, and I'm happy to say that my wife and I just finished our 10th year of marriage.
So, wonderful. 10
and
years.
And also, I always love it. You know, we've been talking a little bit about female roles in our society, and one of the little struggles I had when I did the book Truck was some of the folks out east said, well, we're worried that you won't be able to get women to read that book. And I used to say, man, you don't know the kind of women I know, first of all, because where I come from, man, they not only they like pickups, most of them have one. So I love that that my book was a litmus test for this marriage. I'll take the credit. I don't know if I'm ready for the blame. But.
Well, I tell you what, it was a good one. Valerie on Facebook wondered if you know about the old book Shelters, Shacks, and Shanties. It was in our grade school library in rural Wisconsin, And my brother and I love this book. We tried to build some of the shelters. I think it's a paperback now as a reissue, and I'd love to find it.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, in this day and age, you probably can track it down. And I don't remember that one, but I would bet even money that my brother John had it at some point, because he got all, he had all those Foxfire books, and he built, like, even the house he lives in, a lot of the parts in there, he learned how to build from Foxfire books. He's got a special all-wood padlock that he built that was out of a Foxfire book. And so I would bet that my brother John has seen that Shacks and Shanties book.
I wouldn't doubt it. I forget who it was. This goes back a long ways back with some famous author. They asked someone asked him what which book he would take with him. He just had one book on an island off in the middle of nowhere, and he said the Boy Scout Handbook would be the book that he wanted, yeah, because he didn't know how to do anything, and the Boy Scout Handbook would be the thing that would help him the most.
Yeah, I think when you're cold and hungry and it's raining, you find literature is probably slides down the old Desert Island book list. Shacks and Shanties moves up.
Oh man! Well, The Scavengers is meant to stand alone, or will we get to spend more time with Ford Falcon?
We better, because it was a 2-book contract.
Okay.
I agreed to write a sequel before I even wrote the first one. So, yeah, it's supposed to be a 2-part series, and I've started preliminary work on the second book, although I've got 2 other books, adult books, I have to finish before that. But, yeah, it's you'll notice there when you get to the end, there's a little scene where Maggie Ford Falcon, she sits on the hood of that old car of hers, and she looks out over the valley, and she has a moment of reflection, and she starts asking herself questions and wondering about things that are still unexplained. And on the one hand, that's the main character having a quiet moment, but what it really is the author going, well, how am I going to wrap that up? So that's the prep for book 2. Yeah.
You know, you have, there are some interesting, I mean, you deal with, I'm trying to think of ways to talk about this without giving too much away. Addiction is an area that you cover. It's kind of there are contemporary issues in there. Modified food, addiction.
Yeah, there's all kinds of addiction, genetically modified food, crop monoculture, issues like that, technology, pros and cons, and it's just an attempt, again, to try to lay those issues between the lines of a good story. And as you'll find, it's complicated. At the end, there's not a clear-cut answer. But, yeah, I think, again, that gets back to me just thinking about my daughters and the world that they're growing up in, and just wondering what might happen and how they might deal with it. And I just kind of went with that. When I started the book, I didn't have any list of things I wanted to hit. I just really did let the character go and see what would happen to her in that environment. But
yeah,
certainly there's, you know, when they're out looking for fiddlehead ferns, I mean, that comes right. I have a friend who's a great, she teaches foraging, and so these are things. And when she goes out and gathers the eggs, I mean, my 7-year-old, when she gets home from school every day, she's got to go out and get the eggs. So I tried to mix those sort of contemporary and localized things in there.
Diana in Eagle River, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just recently retired from the library in Eagle River, and I have had Michael for, I believe, 2 speaking engagements, and his programs were the best attended programs that I have ever seen. He's a wonderful storyteller as well as a wonderful writer, and I'm looking forward to reading his new book.
Oh, thanks for that. You know, the talking in public and even what I'm doing right now, that doesn't come naturally. I'm a very introverted, shy person. My favorite place in the world is my little room over the garage where I write. But I just learned a long time ago that if you're going to try to survive in this writing world that we live in now, you have to be able to convert your writing to some sort of public presentation. And I think I was pretty lucky because I was raised by, you know, hanging out at the feed mill or taking a break during haying, and the people I grew up with, you did storytelling. They just would tell stories, and they would never call it that. They were just shooting the breeze. But I try to bring that to my public appearances
and
to just
do.
Get up there.
I think you succeed very well in doing that.
Either that or interpretive dance. Nobody wants to do that from me.
Diana, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And I'm sure Michael does too. Mary.
Oh, man, I'm very, you know, the word I use over and over is gratitude. We've talked before. I never planned any of this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still renew my nursing license every 2 years, man. I'm not taking any chance. I'm just happy to be here.
Oh, man. Mary in Pewaukee. Hi. Thank you for calling. Mary, are you there?
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Yes, hi. Yes, actually, I was just telling my husband, I'm going to be on NPR talking to Michael Perry. So, Michael, how are you? I feel like I know you from, you know, having the fortune of finding your books and read the Population 485 and Coop and Truck and look forward to more books. Main Street also, we're kind of in the middle of right now. And thank you. You know, just basically that's why I wanted to call, in your honesty and your sharing your family with us.
Oh, that's, I appreciate you that. That's a nice follow-up to what I just said, because I just don't, you know, none of this was planned, and I'm just grateful to be here. And I'll say it, I think of myself as a writer with a small W. It's how I accidentally wound up making my living in. But it is, and I absolutely resist the idea that I'm a spokesperson for anyone, but it is a pleasure and an honor to be able to write about a place that I care about and you know, the folks that raised me, and I feel very fortunate.
Yeah, well, you're doing a wonderful job of it, that's for sure. And I did want to mention, you're on quite a swing now this whole month.
Yes, I'm not... I think I get home. I'll see my wife and little ones here for a couple hours on Sunday, but for about 4 weeks, I won't be home. Most of the tour is right in Wisconsin. I just came. I've safely returned from Minnesota. I'm back in Wisconsin now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was up in Duluth yesterday, and I will get down to Chicago, and I'm doing some events in Iowa. But most of what I'm doing is right in Wisconsin, and all that information, if you go to sneezingcow.com, just like it sounds, sneezingcow.com, and there's an events page and all the stops I'm making. And I'm doing, on this tour, I'm stopping at a lot of schools. Wherever I am, they've set up school visits, and those aren't advertised because they're just for the students. But, yeah, if you go to sneezingcow.com, it's got all the places I'm going to be, and I am going to put some miles on.
Yeah, you sure are. Well, you're going to be in... Tomorrow, aren't you in Bayfield tomorrow at Apostle Island Booksellers?
Yeah, Apostle Island's Bookseller, and then Saturday night I'll be at the Big Top Chautauqua up at the tent at one of my favorite places in the whole wide world, and it's old last night, and they've got a comedy group coming in there, and I'll be telling some stories, and I just got an email from Ed, the band leader, and he wants me to sing a song with those guys, so yeah, we'll have a great time in the tent, and then... Sunday I'll be swinging back home to pick up a few things, and then it's off for Minnesota and the rest of the tour. So
yeah, a couple of trips in Minnesota, and then a whole bunch more in Wisconsin, and then on to Iowa for the kind of to sort of end it.
Yeah, going to be in Iowa, and then back home for a week because I have another October 6th. My next book is due, so I'm.
Oh, and yeah. What's your next book?
It's another novel. It's an adult novel. It's a comic novel. I don't know. I don't talk much about what I'm working on because you never know what it's going to end up. But the premise is just I wanted to write some fiction so that I could create whatever sort of characters I wanted for once. And so this next novel is about a longtime bachelor living in a small town in northern Wisconsin.
Now, where would you be able to draw from your experiences for that?
Well, I'm gonna go spend some time. You know. And the premise of the story is that he's a guy, he just raises some beefers on the side, which a lot of the guys I know do. But he has one milk cow, and he goes out to she's due to have a calf. And on Christmas Eve, he goes out to his barn, and she has given birth to a calf. And the calf is a Holstein, and the marking on the one side appears to, it looks like the image of Christ. And then the rest is just what happens.
Oh, my goodness.
That. Yeah, because I'm fascinated by, you know, someone sees that in a they see it in a pancake or they see it on the wall somewhere, and what happens? And I was just trying to imagine what would happen if some quiet, stoic Scandinavian farmer all of a sudden had that, and first he tries to hide it, and then someone sees it, and then, you know, so we'll see.
We'll see. Well, yeah. Here we are out of time. Thank you so much. By the
Thanks
way, Mary Ann from Fall Creek says hi. She's someone who knows you.
Oh, sure, yeah. Probably cut her off on the way to the post office.
and thanks again for talking with us, Mike. I'm really enjoying your book, The Scavengers.
My pleasure. Thank you, Larry. Yep.
Michael Perry, our guest. We'll have him back again. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.
We talk about issues in the news and topics that improve the quality of our lives.
The way the neurons of the brain talk to each other with molecules called neurotransmitters, they don't actually touch each other. They just sort of squirt chemicals at each other to tell each other what to do and what to think next.
When most of the department is white and it's policing a town where 83% of the residents are black, I think some diversity is needed within the department.
The Joy Cardine Show, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on Wisconsin Public Radio. On Point, to the best of our knowledge, Zorba Pastor on Your Health. These programs and many more are possible thanks to listener support. You can learn about WPR programs, schedules, and so much more at WPR.org. Thank you. When you shop with our online partners like the NPR Shop or Amazon.com, a portion of your purchase may benefit Wisconsin Public Radio. Learn more at WPR.org/shop.